KALW.
She tells me Alas has been helping since the pandemic started.
A Half Moon Bay nonprofit is helping an impacted community of farm workers.
There was COVID, then came the fires. After the fires, the flooding, and then the massacre.
Finding help when disasters strike. Then we hear from four candidates vying for San Francisco's District 3 supervisor seat.
What would you do to get our downtown back on track?
And producers of the Edwardian Ball talk about the festival's legacy and fashion.
The right way is to dress for the ball, which is there is no right way.
A celebration of art, music, and clothes. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. 1 year ago, the town of Half Moon Bay was in the spotlight after a farm worker opened fire at two mushroom farms.
Again, I want to reiterate the tragedy that we experienced in our county yesterday in Half Moon Bay. And our hearts are broken. And we're working together with the community to heal this tragic incident.
It was the latest tragedy hitting the agricultural community after drought, fire, and then floods. Thousands of people work on farms along the coast. Many of them struggle financially and get help from local aid organizations. Reporter Sebastian Mignot-Buccelli brings us this story of one local nonprofit that does something different, going directly to farms and bringing aid to their workers.
It's 11 a.m. on a Friday, and a handful of people are filling up a black Ford F-150 truck with jugs of water, rain ponchos, and blankets. They're staff members with Ayudando Latinos a Soñar, or ALAS, and they're preparing for Farm Worker Friday. Every Friday around lunchtime, Jorge Sanchez and other ALAS staff members drive in a caravan out to farms to deliver food, blankets, and other supplies. After picking up fresh ham and cheese sandwiches at a local deli, we're off to visit the first farm. At Carbillo Farms in Moss Beach, Jorge parks by a red barn to hand out food and water. He greets the workers by name.
Lorenzo, Jimenez, Chagui,
Esta es mi tierra, hija.
Ella es Diana López.
Yesenia Garcia lives and works at Carbillo Farms. She says with their hours and transportation costs, it's not always easy to access food. This is one less meal to worry about. She tells me ALAS has been helping since the pandemic started. She says these lunches offer some relief. ALAS visits 2 to 3 farms a week and alternates between over 20 locations. Jorge says that these past years have been tough at farms on the coast.
Desde el año pasado que estaba el COVID, después vinieron los incendios, después de los incendios vino las inundaciones al principio de año, la masacre.
There was COVID, then came the fires. After the fires, the flooding, and then the massacre. But Jorge sees joy when he and his colleagues come out to the farms with their food and supplies. Jorge worked as a paralegal in Venezuela. He came to the U.S. right before the COVID lockdown. He started to work in the field.
Cuando llegué aquí, mi primer trabajo fue en el campo, lanzando semillas desde un tractor.
He says when he arrived here, his first job was to throw seeds from a tractor. He worked there for 2 months. Jorge says that he was paid $100 a day. In his free time, Jorge volunteered at ALAS. Farm workers had to keep working during the lockdown, so the organization distributed masks to farm workers along the coast.
Era un programa donde ALAS proporcionaba los materiales.
Alas got fabric, and the mothers of the community made thousands of masks.
Pero miles de mascarillas.
Jorge was soon able to join Alas as a full-time community case manager. He joined the farm worker outreach team as they were set to distribute meals to farm workers sick with COVID-19. There was just one problem.
Cuando nosotros empezamos a trabajar con los campos, el condado no sabía ni cuántos ranchos había aquí.
He says when they started this work, the county had no idea how many farms or farm workers there were.
Ellos no manejaban esos números.
They didn't keep track of the numbers. Alas and similar nonprofits had to create maps of where farms and farm workers were located through the networks and word of mouth. They delivered emergency food during lockdown. But then the farm worker team wanted to make it a regular thing with Farm Worker Fridays. Alas initially started delivering supplies directly to 20 farm workers on 4 farms. Jorge tells me they now reach about 300 farm workers.
Vengan! Señorita!
We pull up to Propagation Farms off Highway 92 in Half Moon Bay. This time we're joined by some high school volunteers.
Salvador! Pasa!
Once the nights get colder and longer, business slows down, and many farm workers struggle to work full-time. There's less growing on the fields in this time of year, and even those who work in greenhouses often work fewer hours. Juan Cortez is a manager at the nursery here. He says workers don't lose their jobs for the season, but they get paid minimum wage, and their hours get cut, so Farm Worker Fridays are especially necessary.
Todo se aprecia. Se les aprecia todo lo que hacen por los campesinos.
He says everything is appreciated. We appreciate what they do for the farm workers.
También.
Dale, pues pórtate bien.
Jorge says this work is all about relationships.
Una cosa es pasar en el carro y verlos, y otra cosa es ir visitarlo y sentir y tener empatía y ponerte en esas botas que están llenas de barro.
He tells me it's one thing to drive your car and see them. Another thing is going to visit them, feeling empathy with them, and putting yourself in those muddy boots every day with the wet clothes from the morning and those backs burned from the sun. And it seems to me like the workers feel that empathy from Alas. On the highway, I see several farm workers in a field spot Jorge in the black truck. Their farms aren't on the list to receive food and supplies today, but they still wave at Jorge from afar. In Half Moon Bay, I'm Sebastian Mina Buccelli for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Sebastian. We've got a link to more of his coastal coverage with Coastside News at klw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. On January 9th, KALW hosted the first debate for candidates running for San Francisco's District 3 supervisor seat. It was held at our downtown pop-up space at 220 Montgomery and hosted by Manny Yacutiel, the founder of the mission-based community and civic engagement space, Manny's. Today, we'll hear the four candidates, Mo Jamil, Sharon Lai, Jake Connor Ortega, and Danny Sauter. Manny begins with a question about how they would address the city's struggling downtown.
My question for you, and this is, I think, a question they all appreciate as aspiring politicians, is imagine you hold all the levers of power. You are all powerful. You are the judiciary, the legislature, and the executive rolled in one.
San Francisco.
In San Francisco. What would you do to address our downtown's sluggish economic recovery? And how would you get our downtown back on track? Let's go in reverse order. And so we will, it was Mo, and then we'll go Jay Connor, Danny, and then Sharon. Mo, 2 minutes.
Again, we don't need the idea of the week.
We don't need the soccer stadiums. We don't need the universities with no follow through. We need committed leadership who are going to roll up their sleeves and do the right thing. And I think housing, there's a lot of potential. But like I said, you need to kind of adopt the money ball approach. We got to pick out some small buildings, get some hits, get some get on base, and build from that success. We also need to be clear that a lot of the reason why investors are not investing in San Francisco is they see the headlines in the national news. They see the crime. They see the homelessness. And those issues, again, come down to accountability. The city was much cleaner 5 or 6 years ago, right? We were here. We knew that, right? What happened? During COVID, the city had all these emergency powers, shut everything down, shut down schools, shut down businesses, but they took the eye off the ball on one thing, which was the drug crisis, right? And by taking the eye off the ball on that, it's led to a lot of these problems downtown, and investors don't want to invest. And we need to solve that. And that means new leadership, new faces, and more accountability.
All right. Jay Connor, same question. Downtown recovery.
Being formerly homeless, my day job is at the Westfield Mall, so I'm right there seeing all the businesses shut down and leave, and there's two reasons, and the first one is retail theft. I have gone through Chinatown, I've gone through the stores at Westfield Mall who pack up and leave, and I get the same answer, retail theft. I have people come in who steal, and I don't bother calling police because they won't get here in time because there's little police officers available. We need to reinforce the notion that when you come to San Francisco, you come here to shop, you come here to contribute to our local economy. You don't come here from the East Bay or from around the Bay Area to steal from us, because right now, all the businesses you see, I'm pretty sure that they all think about, is today my last day in San Francisco? Can I survive? And this means nothing more than another day of suffering through the nightmares of a small business owner. Adidas just announced they're leaving. J. Crew is leaving on the 22nd. We're losing all of our big retails. When I walk down Union Square, I see all the big retailers' windows are broken. That's not because of the investors don't want to invest. It's because the headlines that we talk about, they're real. We're suffering here. And what I want to do is to crack down on retail theft. Prop 47 is killing us. And as a city who relies on small businesses and our tourists, we need them to feel safe. And they don't feel safe when they see people running out of a jewelry store with a bunch of jewelry in their hands. They see a bunch of people walk out with a bunch of clothes on their shoulders. So we need to shut that down. And there are ways we can do around Prop 47. And as supervisor, that's my main focus, is shutting down retail theft by giving SFPD the tools necessary to not be afraid to do their job throughout these past years that they have been, and empower them to shut down these retail thefts. Yes, we need more officers. We're going to get more officers, and they're going to be bringing in people and showing people. Oh.
Yes. Mo Jamil, 30-second response to that.
I was at a neighborhood meeting with my friends at the Lower Knob Hill Association, and they asked the police one simple question. They have 10 officers in front in Union Square drinking coffee, protecting Louis Vuitton bags, but they can't send one officer to shut down an open-air drug market in Lower Knob Hill. When I'm supervisor, every neighborhood in this district will get the resources they need.
All right. But this will be your rebuttal.
Okay.
30 seconds rebuttal to the rebuttal with Jay Connor.
As someone who's gone to the police commission, sees a different legislation that the commission passes that hampers down SFPD, anything they do with the activist judges we have in our city, it doesn't matter if we arrest anybody, they'll be let back out. And many of us knows who see repeat offenders know that we can arrest anyone we want to. But if we don't actually enforce the law, especially with the judges, there's no point. So yeah, officers are demoralized and they are separated by station. So they can't just leave one location and go off to another.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Danny Souter, question about how you would address our downtown sluggish economic recovery.
Yeah, this is one of the biggest challenges that our city faces. District 3 is responsible for about 70% of our city's revenue. Much of that comes from right here in the financial district. So we have to get this right. And it's going to take some short-term action, But everything's got to be on the table. Those big ideas can't be dismissed, and we have to pursue them. Short term, things like public space activations, things like getting ambassadors on the street to clean up the streets, to make people feel safe, to make this neighborhood clean as folks return to work. So they want to come back and they want to stay here and go out to bars and restaurants and happy hour. It also means supporting Prop C on the March ballot. Prop C is the effort to make it easier to convert office space into residential. We have 30,000 square feet of empty office space right now in these surrounding blocks. That's 20 Salesforce Towers worth of empty office space. We've got to convert as much of that as we can to residential. We only have 315 people living in the downtown core. It's amazing. There's no reason that there shouldn't be thousands of folks living downtown. And there is a blueprint for this. This is what other cities have done. It's what Lower Manhattan did after 9/11, and it's been successful there to make it into a 24/7 mixed-use, vibrant neighborhood. And lastly, I want to say, although there are not many folks living immediately downtown, I don't want to forget about the folks just a couple blocks north in Barbary Coast, because that is a vibrant neighborhood that often gets overlooked. What that neighborhood needs most, as I hear from them, is neighborhood-serving retail. And neighborhood-serving retail can't exist in these neighborhoods if the crime sprees continue. So we need to put more police officers on the streets to make sure that small businesses feel safe in this downtown district and in the surrounding neighborhoods.
Thank you, Danny. And the final person to answer this question is Sharon.
Yeah, so I really actually believe that economic recovery, local economic recovery, is very, very important. It is how we're going to fund all of the services that all of our neighbors and our merchants really need. But, you know, first, let me make the point that downtown recovery is not the only recovery that's necessary for our economy to get back on track. We actually have to have a comprehensive strategy that balances neighborhoods recovery as well as downtown, because they're all interconnected, right? We've experienced that during the pandemic, the reason why neighborhoods like Chinatown, North Beach, and, you know, Fisherman's Wharf, their economics were not working well is because of downtown and vice versa. So it's all really important that we have a balanced view of that. You know, my day job right now is trying to create and generate more diversification in San Francisco's economy. I think that is an extremely important step for us to take for the long-term resilience for the city. We can't make the same economic mistakes that we made in the last cycle, where we kind of over-indexed on certain industry types. We have to continue to expand and invest in jobs that can't be outsourced, that will be here to stay, including sustainability and green energy type of jobs, green transition type of jobs. You know, I also want to point out that, you know, 20% of GDP can actually be generated through streets and sidewalks. And we have one of the best weathers, you know, in the country, and we really need to continue to expand the use of that. You know, big supporter of night markets and such. And, you know, I also want to say that, you know, in all of the conversions that I think we're all here to support for downtown, it really isn't that easy. We need a lot of financial, you know, gap funding and incentives for that to happen. It can't happen in every single building. Studies have shown that, which is why I think supporting measures that will allow the streamlining is important. Thank you.
That was an excerpt from KELW's San Francisco District 3 Supervisor Debate. We heard from candidates Mo Jamil, Sharon Lai, Jake Connor Ortega, and Danny Sauter. It was hosted by Manny Yacoudiel. You can find a link to the hour-long debate at kelw.org/crosscurrents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba.
This Friday and Saturday, there'll be a celebration of the beloved creations of the late great author and illustrator Edward Gorey. He was a writer and artist who created eerie and magical stories. He entertained children and adults with his creations that revolved around goth and monster elements. Gorey's tales inspired San Francisco's annual Edwardian Ball. What started off as a small party 22 years ago has turned into a subculture festival, drawing thousands of people from around the Bay and internationally. In 2022, KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Edwardian Ball producers Justin Katz and Mike Gaines. They talked about the event's roots and its evolution.
When I look at the Edwardian Ball, it's so San Francisco to me. And I feel like, you know, any day in San Francisco, you can see people dressed like that, walking around the street anyway, you know. So what made you decide, Justin, why did y'all, you know, you and the other co-founders want to throw a party like this?
Yeah, I think the as the folklore goes and as actually happened, my band, L'Ensemble Rosin Coven, was hosting a martini bar music lounge in the middle of a remote desert.
Of course.
And somebody left an Edward Gorey book on the bar. And after one particularly boisterous set, we were mingling with the book and martinis. It was proclaimed that wouldn't it be a good idea to do a party in honor of Edward Gorey? And happened to be standing next to the owner at the time of the Cat Club. Oh. And he said, I have a bar. And I said, I have a band. And we said, let's do it. So it was maybe 3 months later, December of 99, that we convened to play with a party celebrating Gorey and that one book that was on the bar, The Gashly Chrome Tinies. And I think from the get-go, we recognized that it would be fun to take the Edward of our desire, Mr. Gorey, and play with Edwardian and throw a layer of bustles and top hats on top of it and kick it off that way. So it was always Edward Gorey, but Edwardian as a nod to a time to be civil, fancy, elegant, playful, and all the mischief that comes with it.
Which I think is fitting since we've been living in a pandemic. Talk about this theme of revival and then also to Gorey's tale of the Wuggly Ump, this interesting children's book.
For context on that, just to start with the second part first, every year, Rosin Coven and Vaudevere, the group that I direct and that came into the ball in 2004, Justin brought us in to help stage a production that took a different story. At that point, they had already, I think, been on to their fourth story. And so since then, we take a Gorey illustrated story and we stage it every year with the collaboration with the orchestra, you know, the 10-piece, the Rosin Coven Orchestra, and sometimes up to a 20-performer crew from Vaudevere.
Wow.
And we stage our interpretation of a unique story. So this year, a new to us story was Wuggly Ump. And the Wuggly Ump takes the trajectory from Edward Gorey. And that is a lot of happenstance along the way with the antics of children and usually children at play. And then the inevitable demise of those children. And it's, you know, honestly, not a lot of his stories take many diverse trajectories than that.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the book. It looks like it's like this gray creature blob and it eats the kids.
Yes. A creature blob. Kids are usually the character in every one of his illustrations, right? And then all of a sudden, they end up inside the Wuggly Ump. But in a very gleeful manner, as far as the illustration's concerned. They're doing handstands and having a party inside the Wogliump's stomach.
Yeah.
And that, I guess, is a segue for the feel-good idea of this revival. We felt it was an opportune moment for that revelry. And that's what we feel revive means.
You know, when I look at the fashion and just the themes, you see circus, goth, burlesque, steampunk. Who goes to the ball? And have you ever been surprised about people who did show up?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's a creative artist, actually. I think that's the common thread there. You know, the common thread being owning your own creativity.
That was Edwardian Ball producers Justin Katz and Mike Gaines speaking with KLW's Janae Darden in 2022. And you can join the celebration starting this Friday at the Regency Ballroom in San Francisco. We've got a link to all that information at kelw.org/crosscurrents.
The sky went golden from the parking house of agony. A corn pin of vitamin was dipped in QRV. On the left bank she quickly sank into depravity. She later died of suicide from drinking QRV. QRV.
Today's CrossCurrents team includes Sandra Halliday, Alistair Boone, Gonady Joe Johnson, James Rowlands, Victor Tense, Shirin Adel, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Sunni Khalid, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For CrossCurrents, I'm Hannah Baba.